Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics from the state capitol. We are going to bring you the man at the center of one of the biggest programs the state of Missouri has undertaken in the last few years, former Representative Lindell Fraker, the director of the DHSS Medical Marijuana Program. Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate being here.
I think there's going to be a lot of Missourians that don't even know this goes on. So give me the rundown. So if you've got a set of conditions, you go to a physician right now, and they could write you a prescription for medical marijuana to be used for your medical problem. How long has the program been in place?
We began this program just a little over 3 years ago, and about 2 years ago is when we issued the licenses for the operations to begin, and it took a few months for them to get up and going. And then we began issuing patient cards about two years ago as well. So if you have an ailment that qualifies per the Constitution, per the amendment, then your physician can issue you a certification, a little bit different than a prescription. Certification says that you have this ailment and that the doctor would certify that you could be a candidate for medical marijuana.
And this wasn't something you voted in by using the legislature. This was voted by the people, right?
That's right, a constitutional amendment.
Well, a pretty good chunk.
Absolutely, and it's about 13 pages long, and it's pretty structured, and we have to pretty much...
It surprised me how many folks voted for that. I have to say, I wasn't so surprised you won. You had some pretty significant Missourians in favor of it, but the margin was bigger than I would have thought.
66%?
Yeah.
Bigger than the votes that Senator Hawley got in that election.
You get 66% of people, Missourians agree on anything. You've done a day's work. So let me ask you this. I've watched these numbers, because I thought, I guess it projects at 50,000, maybe 100,000. You've had 160,000 people sign up, go to their doctor, get this certification, get these prescriptions. Where was your projections? This has to be way off the Richter scale.
Well, believe it or not, we were told about 2-3% of your state's population would become medical marijuana patients. And we're right on target. We're at about 2.5% right now. And that 2-3% was within 3 years, and we're gonna be 3 years this summer. So really right on target.
Here's the thing I've found to be good and surprising. I think when folks talk about pot, you know, I guess I'm old. I guess this gray hair is telling my age.
I'm older than you.
Well, and you're from Webster County. Yeah. I'm Butler County. We're Southern Missouri boys.
Yep.
You know, if my dad would have thought I was smoking pot, the beating I'd have got might still be going on today.
Yep.
I guess I just had this in my head that when folks had medical marijuana, there's going to be big leaves everywhere and green, and it was going to be gaudy. But there's a place here in Jeff City, probably what, as the crow flies, maybe a mile from where we are right now. It is a very classy establishment. You really would not know it was a medical marijuana facility unless you had a reason to go in or read about it. I found that for most Missourians, they probably don't even know this program exists because it's been very respectful and classy to the neighborhoods that it's in.
That's exactly right, and that's by design. Yeah. We wanted to make sure that it was a very patient, physician-focused program as an alternative for medication for the patients, not a head shop, not a place to, you know, buy your stuff to get high, to actually give you an option for medicine. And that's how the amendment was drafted, that's what the voters voted on, and we believe that's what Missourians wanted. And we've got some great operators doing just that.
I think if you didn't do it that way, you'd have some folks upset. That 33% that voted no has been pretty silent about the program. But I think part of that's because the distributors have been pretty respectful of their beliefs, which are sincere.
Yeah, just like about any election. And then there's probably 33% of the 66 that voted for it that really wanted it, and 33 in the middle that decided the election that are probably folks like you, give the people an option for alternative medication, but they don't want to see, you know, pot for everybody.
Here's the thing that I've seen as this has become, as you've actually started issuing licenses, you have even a part of the folks that are pro-marijuana period, medical marijuana probably too. I've seen a small underground of folks that, well, you should have pot everywhere. It shouldn't have to get a doctor. You should just sell pot in a vending machine, at a newsstand, in restaurants. I get the sense that Missourian who said, well, you know, if folks need it, they can help them, good. I get the sense if you open pot up and just had pot everywhere, and you know, you might find some hippies or whatever, that might be all right. I think folks in Webster County, that might get their dander up.
I think so. 2-3% is still not a very large segment of the population if you think about it. And that's all that have patient cards. So I believe that people still want a well-regulated, patient-focused. You know, we brought in the law enforcement agencies early on, formed great partnerships with them to make sure they knew what we were doing. And we have a very well-ran program that we think that the citizens are proud of.
You know, you're a highly successful Webster County hillbilly. I'm a simple West Butler County hillbilly. I just get the sense that and we don't like regulations. However, I think you're going to find most folks, especially early in this experiment, want a pretty tightly regulated program, similar to other prescription drugs or whatever they're going to do. And that's about the only way I think they take it down.
That's what they tell me when I'm out around the state traveling. The majority of the citizens of Missouri probably don't smoke pot.
Yeah.
And they want something that's well regulated, just similar to casinos or even alcohol.
Regulations are really a bad word in this particular building. I think this might be one of the outlying exceptions.
I totally agree with you.
So speaking of getting out, some folks wonder where you are here, because sometimes, where are you at when you're not in the Capitol?
Well, the first year I traveled the state quite a bit, tried to visit with anyone that wanted to talk, whether it was a civic club or an association, you know, the prosecuting attorneys associations, all the law enforcement agencies, hospital associations, trying to get the word out as to what we were doing. People were curious. They didn't know we were going to have this kind of a well-regulated professional industry. And I think it paid off. And it helped us as we were drafting the rules as well. Our rules were based on input from the citizens of Missouri. It wasn't just someone sitting in the office dreaming them up. And again, we had a 13-page amendment that gave us a pretty good foundation that had to keep us within certain parameters. So out there in the state, and I know you do a lot of that with your show.
Got to visit with your kin folks down
there. That's right. And you know, it's a great way to really get the pulse of the state. And sometimes what you hear around here on the social media is not really exactly how the people feel.
That's probably true. State politics, church That's politics, right. School politics, every kind. Before you go, part of that amendment said this money goes to veterans. Some of the profits are made from the state taxes. How much money have you given to Missouri veterans as of now?
That's probably our most bright and shining point of this whole program. So far, we've given $8.9 million to the veterans. We're getting ready to transfer another $5 million probably this spring through the supplemental budget that we're working on right now. And this fall, once the new fiscal year rolls around, we have budgeted to transfer about $14
million. Now, so, if you're a Missouri veteran that went to Vietnam or Gulf War, Afghanistan, what would that mean for you? What will you see better done because of this program?
Well, I think the veterans have struggled a little bit with money in getting into their veterans' homes and some of their programs. This gives the Veterans Commission the autonomy to be able to do wherever they see the need. We're to provide the money.
So you just provide the money.
That's right.
You just drop it off and they spend it.
Right. And then in addition to the veterans' money, there's also your normal 8% local taxes and state taxes. So both
How
the state
and
the locals.
How many folks work in this industry right now?
Right now we're getting close to 7,000.
And I guess there would have been, if he's worked in this industry before, you might be doing it left-handed, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to explain it.
7,000 new jobs that are actually paying payroll taxes and things.
We do know this. The black market in Missouri was more than a $500 million industry.
Wow.
And our program right now, we've done around $230 million in sales. So we've really tapped into that black market. And if you look at states like Oklahoma, where it's the Wild Wild West, the black market is running rampant. And they can't even tell who's legal and who isn't down there.
I just, something tells me, if you're in Joplin, you do not want what's happening there come across state line.
It really is a mess, and I think anyone that lives down there can tell you. I understand the Oak City area just itself has over 2,500 licensed facilities just in that metropolitan area.
You might get Terry Fond in West Butler County's dander up if she starts seeing that too many things popping up.
It would certainly be that way in Webster County.
Well, former Representative Frager, we hope you'll come back. Maybe bring the Veterans Commission folks with us in the fall.
Absolutely.
When you give some of this money out.
Be glad to, Scott. Really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Remember, this week in Missouri Politics, debut of Representative Brian Seitz. You're going to get a kick of it. You're going to love it after this.
All across Missouri, our new car and truck dealers are building strong local economies. When you buy a car or truck in Missouri, you're helping to support over 20,000 Missouri families who rely on the auto industry for good-paying local jobs. You're also helping fund our communities, schools, first responders, and our roads, because dealers generate millions of dollars in tax revenue. Missouri's automobile dealers have been the foundation of our communities for generations and for generations to come. The Missouri Automobile Dealers Association, the heart of Missouri.
For more than a century, the St. Louis Carpenters Union has shaped our communities. Through trusted alliances, we deliver skilled professional craftspeople while our business partners provide the kind of quality jobs that keep our economy humming. It's a blueprint that has worked since 1882. Turning Missouri into a right-to-work state stalls progress, wipes out jobs, and kills momentum. Right-to-work is wrong for everyone. Let's keep Missouri moving forward. Visit carpdc.org to learn more.
Your energy needs are changing. That's why at Ameren Missouri, we're not waiting on the future. We're building it with the Smart Energy Plan, advancing thousands of projects across the state, helping reduce emissions through cleaner energy sources, boost reliability with self-healing equipment, and better withstand storms with new composite poles. Moving Missouri forward and bringing us all a little closer together. That's energy at work. Ameren Missouri.
Welcome back to Week of Missouri Politics from the State Capitol. Full Opinion Maker panel with some new folks. Christian Rader, the editor of the Heartlander. I tell you what, I'm always a fan of new folks coming covering state government. You've had a fresh perspective, something very different. Tell folks about the Heartlander and where they can find it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on. We are at Heartlander News on all social media platforms. Heartlandernews.com is our website. We started in April of last year and really just noticed an imbalance in the way that a lot of the political news has been reported in Missouri and nationally, and so we wanted to kind of contribute to helping that balance out and make an even playing field.
If you might think maybe some folks in the media might be a touch liberal, it's a heck of a place to go, right? Rachel Brown, everybody knows you, North County Representative. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
You think we can get an opinion out of you today? We
never can. Of course.
We'll see. Representative Brian Sides, I told folks in the last segment, I think they're going to enjoy you being on. Southwest Missouri down in Branson.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being on, sir.
I appreciate it. Good to be here.
And somebody that a lot of folks know, former presidential candidate, Senate candidate, radio host, and karate expert, Austin Peterson. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Scott. Glad to be here.
Let's talk about the thing that everybody's been talking about this week, maps, congressional maps. They were going to 6-2-7-1 arguing, you're a rhino, you're whatever. Right now, they've got a 6-2 map that passed the House. 6-2, some folks would say it's not that strong, one of the districts, but essentially that's what they were trying to do. They sent it over to the Senate, and like most things in the Senate, it's getting a little extra scrutiny. If you could just take the pencil, what would you do?
Ultimately, I think the reality is that as angry as some of the members are at Caleb Rowden, he's got to deal with reality. I think that they come to a compromise, we get a 6-2 map, and the reason is because while it is election year time and all of the politicians want to get reelected looking very conservative for their home districts, the sad reality is at the beginning of this legislature, how many Republicans resigned, and everybody knows that the supermajority isn't there anymore. The Republicans have got to go and talk to our friends across the aisle. They've got to make a deal, and I think Caleb Rowden is saying to himself, listen, I don't have time to waste with something that's already a foregone conclusion.
Besides, tell me, you were in the thick of this. Everybody was pulling on your arms the other week in the House. What actually happened? What did you think of the final product?
Yeah, I think we compromised to send a 6-2 bill over there, but I think we've talked about this before. I'm in 8-0. Why am I in 8-0? In 8-0 because Republicans govern best. So if we can't get an 8-0 constitutionally, then a 7-1 is what I would be supporting.
Now, they have to cut the Republicans up. To me, it's like a poker game, right?
Sure.
There's X number of Republicans in this state. Republicans draw the maps if they can get it done.
Right.
You're essentially taking your hand and saying, you know what, I think we can get 7. It's like playing spades back with mom and dad.
Sure.
You'd bet where you can think without getting bags. You're essentially playing a poker game of, you can get 6 probably strong.
Sure.
For sure. But you're going to get that extra one. You're trying for that extra one?
Right. It's not bluffing. Okay. When I say 8-0, how much easier would it be not to spend all of these weeks redrawing districts, redoing this, redoing that? But in reality, if we can get a 7-1, I think I'd like to see us have greater representation in Washington,
now,
D.C.
I see a 7-1, but an 8-0 back in West Butler County, we'd say pigs get fed, hog gets slaughtered.
I understand.
See, Scott, this is a man who's ready for war. We were talking about that before. This is a guy who's ready to go to battle. He wants to crush his enemies, and he wants to hear the lamentations of their women. This is Conan the Barbarian.
Conan won.
Right.
I woke up to you saying that one day here. on the radio, I should say.
Right.
Let me ask you. When they talk about the whole state obsessed with St. Louis and what they're going to do with it, Kansas City's getting a little attention this time. What do you think? What's a good map? If you were drawn, let's say you had supermajority, would you take that extra seat or not?
So I don't lamentate. So let's start there. I would caution First of all, it will never be an 8-1. Of course, sure. Congressional District 1 is VRA protected. I would caution, given that so many liberals are making an exodus to Kansas City area, which we absolutely saw, I would caution trying to be greedy would actually cost them a congressional seat. I would urge them to consider that though we're drawing these maps now, over a 10-year period, how that changes and what that looks like. So I don't really see a way for them to pull a 7-1 without potentially losing a congressional seat. So I would just kind of be mindful of that. I think they are bluffing with the, oh, we're, you know, are threatening, oh, we're gonna do this 7-1. I don't see it happening. If they can try for it and try to crack up 5, and they'll end up with a 5-3 map.
Christian Rader, where representatives from, they've been Republicans forever. Where you and I are from, down in Southeast Missouri, being Republican is a pretty new thing. There ain't no Republican club buildings that are older than 10, 15 years old. Things change. 06 and 08, I remember. They were very good years for Democrats. What do you think? Right now, is it essentially a poker game? And where's it going to end up?
I have no idea where it's going to end up. I think that no matter what the final product is going to be, it's going to be a fight to get there, whether it ends in the legislature and goes to the courts or whatever it may be. I'm more excited about just getting something done and something concrete in the books so that we can get the word out to the voters. Because the most important thing is the voters know where their district is, mm-hmm. where it ends, and who their candidates are to be voting
and
for.
And it's kind of fair to communities and stuff to get to know their congresswoman early.
Exactly.
So they start to get to know if they move these lines. The lines will move. Probably speed does start to matter. They have waited till about 3 weeks before it's going to show up here to file.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's an extremely important thing to allow voters time to get comfortable with their candidates and to really know them. Whereas, you know, if we rush something out, they feel like they have to make a decision without knowing the full information.
So where it stands right now, and this is an issue that's probably going to change all weekend. I don't think Andrew Penn's going to get to enjoy the Chiefs game. Everybody's going to be calling him and bugging him about what they want their map to look like. But right now, you've got a map in the Senate that they're going to have a hard time passing. Mm-hmm. I think they might force it through, might make everybody go all night and finally get something done. Gonna be challenging.
Sure.
Let's say they amend the map and send it back to you. There's folks that have said quietly, but some not so quietly, there's not 82 votes for that 6-2 map anymore. Not 82 Republican votes. Right. What would it take for they come to you and say, we need you to help on this map? What would that conversation look like, and what would it look like you to have asking for?
So you're gonna spoil my who won the week answer. People have already been calling, to be honest, if I'm being perfectly frank, trying to see what, and I mean, if I tell you, I'd have to kill you, so that's still negotiable.
Well, don't tell me. We'll figure something out. Brandon works on the show as a Cubs fan. Tell him.
Right? But in seriousness, I mean, I think that's up for interpretation and discussion and consideration. What my goal is, because this, you know, my tenure here or the congressional districts will outlive my tenure in this body. So whatever it is, it would have to be beneficial to not only the 73rd district as it stands, where I live will be the 73rd district again. It would have to be beneficial for the people of Missouri, not just me, but for people of Missouri moving forward. So it's not so much as what they would have to give me, but certainly what would be in it for my community for me to consider a vote.
So something.
Something though, absolutely.
Representative, yes. This comes back over. Could they twist your arm into a 6-2 map yes vote?
If we have a really strong 6-2, that may be what we end up with. I would encourage a 7-1 map, but reality says we may be looking at a strong 6-2, and if push comes to shove, I'd have to be for that.
Yeah, in the Senate, they want two things. They want a 7-1 map. They want St. Charles County altogether.
Okay.
I doubt the math works on St. Charles County. The math's working against them, long shot.
Okay.
But they probably could improve the map partisan-wise for the 2nd Congressional District.
Okay.
Does that come over to the House and do you all just finally say, okay, we'll move on?
No, I think that could come to the House and we can debate that. I think a strong debate on any of the numbers is an important thing, and I think we can get it done.
I got to send callers to your show. If they can't get 8-0, they'll settle for 7-1, but 6-2, they might squeal a little bit.
Yeah, you know, they're going to be the hardcores. The type of conservative talk radio listener wants that 7-1 map. Yeah. They like that Representative Brian Seitz. Yeah. They want the fire and the fury. You know, they're looking at Senator Bob Onder and Senator Bill Eigel taking up the mantle of the freedom fighters, and the conservative caucus are heroes to them. Right, but there are the people, especially in a company town like Jefferson City, the listeners to the morning show who are saying to themselves, oh, you know, I'm looking at a state worker pay raise here, possibly going to get an extra 5.5%. Maybe I'm going to keep up with inflation, but at least I'm going to get a raise. MoDOT saw that under Patrick McKenna recently. There's something that animated our audience, the gas tax. That's a big debate, and every day nobody has a problem.
You think Patrick McKenna is still director of MoDOT by the time folks see this show?
I don't know. It's 50-50. I see some in the Senate calling for his head, but who knows what happens. Well, you know, this is the town
when
where
Senator
everybody
Hageman
fails
called off for his head. Yeah. That's a problem. He's got an appointment with Senator Hageman next week in the Appropriations Committee. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
The question is, how many enemies does the Conservative caucus make this year? It's always they're always at the spearhead of the troublemaking. And on the redistricting issue, you know, they go back to their districts. They look like heroes. But everybody here feels like, you know, that got hit by a bus.
You know, it surprised me. There's not that many senators are living and dying with how this congressional map goes. There's just some folks that just aren't that dying with it. That's an interesting thing to me. Christian Rader, the Attorney General Eric Schmidt has decided they went to court. Judge Green rules, you can't mess with these kids. Eric Schmidt, the school say, yes, we're gonna mask them anyway. We don't care. Eric Schmidt says, we're going to sue you. So he waits till the order is official and sues him. What's the state of play on this, and how does this affect the U.S. Senate race?
I think it affects it heavily. I think that it's a very favorable look on him to be standing up and fulfilling the promises that he made that he would be challenging the schools who try to still enforce the mask mandate. And I think especially with Judge Green's ruling and the recent evidence came out that, you know, cloth masks virtually do nothing to stop the virus, that there really isn't much reason to continue to try to go against Attorney General Eric Schmidt and enforce those mask mandates when I think he's on the right side of the argument legally.
Representative, when I think of you, I think of education. Tell folks, if you're a person trying to keep your school open, trying to do the best you know to do, some of these folks I think are about power. Some folks are just dealing with a terribly challenging situation the best they can. What's the argument against what the Attorney General's doing?
Sure, the major argument is, you know, it's expensive. And I'm also known for being a fiscal conservative. I don't see this as being fiscally conservative. I live and pay taxes in Ferguson Florissant School District, and here we talk about financing and funding schools.
Those kids are masks, I assume.
They are in masks. But we talk about funding schools all the time. We just had bills come through about, you know, fixing the glitch and this and that of money and blah, blah, blah. These lawsuits cost money. And in urban areas are where poorer kids live. We say, well, charter schools are the answer. Whatever.
Is there a charter school in the state that isn't forced masking their kids?
How many are being sued?
Yeah, I heard a lot about that.
How many are being sued? How many of their elected school boards, if they have one, which they tend not to, chose to have them mask? So these are the questions. I'm not necessarily here to debate right or wrong, but what I will say is that if we are about local control, then we allow people who we duly elected to make the decisions for where they live on what's best for those kids. And if we do not like it, what do? We vote for someone else.
I got a working theory. Republicans stopped being for local control when John Cawthorn won the Senate race in Northeast Missouri and gave him the majority. That was the last you heard of local control.
Yes, indeed.
Representative Zeitz, so folks are really trying their best to hang in.
Sure.
Some folks are, I think it is kind of a petty power thing. Okay. Some folks are doing the best they can do.
Right.
What do they do right
now? We're talking about children. Have the schools become social engineering factories? And are these mask mandates? We know that children are, by and large, unaffected by COVID-19. Why are we masking up our students, our kindergartners, first, second, third grade, not allowing them to see each other's expressions, emote, develop as young people and so forth? I think we're stunting their development emotionally and socially by covering up their faces, and yet we can go to a college or a pro football game and everybody just runs wild and they're free.
Because the adults are saying no.
Right? Well, we're forcing little children because they can be forced, and
yep.
Someone needs to advocate for these young people, and I'm one of those.
Austin Peterson, I love on your show when you point out hypocrisy.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's suing the schools, that are, and good Lord, good. I'd send an extra fiver with my taxes if he could get Gussie out of a mask. But I see a bunch of Republicans down at the charter school thing today. All those poor kids are masked. No one seems to care.
Yeah, well, I mean, some people respect private property and understand that there's a difference between public property and private property, and there's a distinction there, right? The question is, if you have a private school, it's a Catholic school, and, you know, the tuition isn't paid for by the state, then those people feel that they have a right to set the rules on their own private property.
Now, charter school will tell you they're a public school.
Right, for sure. So they're going to get funds from where they get funds from, and they're going to have to sing the king's song when they take the king's coin. But, I mean, why aren't people talking about the real physical repercussions of the masks themselves? Because the science on whether or not they're effective for COVID-19 at this point is dubious. Maybe they work, Maybe they don't. I'm not going to say this. But one thing I can say for sure, teen suicides are up. That there's been a 300 increase in when it comes to speech learning on children, because lots of children learn by seeing people when they speak. They look at their body language and they look at their lips moving in order to learn to speak English and their language. So there are real physical deleterious effects that happen when we mask society, when we keep ourselves away from one another, that have real mental health repercussions. And when you look at the suicide rate for teens in the last 2 years, it is not a coincidence. It is not just because of the fear of a pandemic. It's because when they go online, they see their kids and they have their parties online, and they don't get that physical interaction that is so important in the development of young people. And those are real physical impacts that very few people discuss.
Brian, if every place in the world is tightening hours because of lack of staffing, you have to expect schools are going to be affected by the same things.
Right. We have to look at our children, though. The children are the future. How are they being treated, and are they being adequately educated during this pandemic? At home, internet learning and so forth, we found that that does not work. The children need to be in the classroom, and they need to be free to be kids, and showing your face is part of that.
Is the school just on the hot seat right now, so everything they do is going to get shot at?
Because of course we are. And I say we, because
be
of course
I am an educator.
And let's be clear, I think when we're talking about numbers and stuff, we're not talking about urban kids who live on top of each other, essentially. They are close quartered, and I have students and know students and have gone to funerals of kids who were, you know, not only were they sick, but, you know, they live with grandma, killed grandma, made grandma sick. So again, when we're talking about local areas, I'm a person where I don't think necessarily the governor was wrong when he didn't do this statewide mandate. Mm-hmm. You do what's best for your, you know, we elect people where we live. You do what's best for people in your district, in Branson. You do what's best for you, but let us make the decision, because at the end of the day, we're the ones, or they're the ones who have the boots on the ground to make those
ABC
choices.
ABC has a mandate. We're going off the air in a minute. So Christian Ritter, who won the week?
I think Attorney General Eric Schmidt did. I think that he's on the forefront of the fight for parents' rights, and that's the hottest topic issue right now, and I think that he's winning that fight on the right side of it legally.
Who won the week?
The Missouri House Redistricting Commissioners. They did something that everybody thought was impossible.
Absolutely,
and got those maps done. And so, you know, to your point, Christian, people in there will know who or what house district they're in, at least. And so they have a chance to get to know
who's
running in their district.
Maybe let Pat Thomas take over their thing, and then you'd be done in 2 days.
Absolutely.
Won the week.
I did.
Nice.
That was easy. I've had numerous bills in committee so far this session. I think I've had 7. I had 4 this week. And the voice of Southwest Missouri is being heard. So I'll put the crown on my head.
There you go. Who won the week?
Well, I'll give it a surprising answer. I think State Representative Tony Lovasco won the week. He got a civil asset forfeiture bill through a hearing and is getting some bipartisan interest on this one. It kind of is bringing both parties together here in the state of Missouri over an issue that's near and dear to my ideological heart as a libertarian Republican. You know, civil asset forfeiture becoming quite unpopular.
Just you trust the government to take your stuff, or don't you?
That's right. As they keep printing cash, you know, you'll hit that $10,000 limit just to go buy some steak at the store these days with inflation in the Fed. So good job, Tony Lovasco.
There you go. I'm going to say the Fraternal Order Police in the state of Missouri. They come with a great new program. Everybody talks about wanting to support the police. Maybe not everyone. A lot of folks. Now you can. Go to their website, become a supporter, very similar to NRA's program. Lots of folks have already hit it up. You should too. We'll see you next week back in our St. Louis studios for This Week in Missouri Politics.
This Week in Missouri Politics, sponsored by the Missouri Association of Career Fire Protection Districts, Spire, and Sterling Bank.